Hello, homeschool friends, and welcome to this episode of the Homeschool High School Podcast from SevenSistersHomeschool.com, brought to you by the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. I'm Sabrina, here today with
Vicki
and also with
Kim.
And we're going to communicate about communicating today.
Oh, that was great.
Wasn't that good?
It was good.
We shall.
We're just communicating so well.
We are. Yes. We are. So what we want to communicate to you in this episode is, encouragement for and strategies for building strong communication skills in your teens.
Yes.
And sometimes we focus so much on written communication in the academic realm that we then find ourselves frustrated with oral communication. And whether that is struggling relationally, emotionally, sometimes, I know this never happens in your homeschool, probably, dear seventh sister who's listening in today.
Yes.
But in some people's homeschools,
we've heard things like that occasionally. Yes.
It never has happened in ours either.
Yes. No, never. But sometimes parents and teens don't communicate very well within their own home. So some of that can be relational and emotional. And sometimes, too, we just observe that our teens are not very skilled verbal communicators in other places, too, where it has nothing to do with relationship struggles or headbutting or anything. So we're going to dig into some common communication challenges and some strategies for dealing with them.
Without saying there's one right way to communicate.
There's not one right way to communicate.
Right. Wow.
Okay. So what are some of the things that we observe teens struggling with in oral communication?
Well, one thing is sometimes they feel uncomfortable when they go to their like dual enrollment courses and they have to give a presentation or even at co-op. You know, I remember in the early days when my kids were just getting into high school and they had to do their first presentation in co-op, everybody's nerves would just be all a jitter. So making those presentations, and that happens in life. Even if you have a non-college bound kid, they will have to talk in public at some time.
Yeah.
And it can really make people a nervous mess.
All right, so there are those situations where it's actually upfront public speaking stuff. And really, the only way to help with that is
to practice it.
And to start in really small, safe, funny, you know, gentle environments.
Encouraging.
Right. But the more you do it, the easier it gets. And so that's one thing that some homeschoolers don't think about, the need to provide their child with those kinds of opportunities.
I mean, one way to do it, even if the kids aren't in a co-op class, is just have them memorize something short, a poem or a phrase, and then say it in front of you, you know, just to feel awkward for a minute and be able to push through.
If you can get into a group setting, though, then it becomes so much easier to provide lots of progressive steps in that, and to even use something like the speech one curriculum from SevenSistersHomeschool.com in the ebook store. Which is designed to be gentle and lighthearted and fun and safe, but does move you along step by step from very, very easy short presentations to then ones that require more stamina.
And it's something that we did. I mean, it's a shameless plug,
but we only wrote it because we believed in it so much and because we enjoyed it so much in our community and with our own kids. So,
and we found out in the trenches with our kids when we got them in a group what works to ease them into the process without making it a big hairy deal, you know. So we had fun with it. And so what we shared is what we learned in a step-by-step, you know, a once a week kind of adventure for the kids. So it's very non-threatening and user-friendly.
Very.
Okay, so in addition to those formal situations, class discussions and group discussions, whether it's in a Bible study or a book group or just even a social setting with, with people that you may not, we're not talking about just hanging out with your best friends, you know. Give and take in discussion can be difficult for teens. How can we help them?
You know, yeah. that's if teens are just starting, mm-hmm. like if they're in a new group, so they don't know everybody yet, it helps to do a lot of listening and then tell themselves at some point, at least once, I'm going to contribute something on topic. And so to say, I'm just giving myself permission to only do one, and then to have a one statement that they will make. So they may want to study up ahead of time on what the topic is if they're really nervous, and then have kind of like a soundbite that they can share. And it might feel a little contrived to start with, but at least it helps them ease in. And once mm-hmm. kids get comfortable, they usually do just fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or they might even start with, I agree with that because, you know,
oh, so
they
Kim, don't
have to practice. If it's not a kind of a thing yeah. where they could practice, they could just pick something that resonated with them mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and then just say why it resonated with them.
Right. Yes.
And so they're not even having to come up with some new material. They're just
So we've
responding.
All seen the kids who are just about paralyzed in group discussion mm-hmm. situations, and where even when everyone gently smiles at them and mm-hmm. says, what did you think mm-hmm. about that? I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I think that one thing that we need to, this is hard because I don't want to say it's a should, but I think it's almost always a win when uh-huh. you mm-hmm. offer your kid this kind of gentle encouragement. Is to let them know how uncomfortable that makes everybody else in the group. If they just won't share at all, mm-hmm. And give them the example of if someone has gone to the trouble to bake you something mm-hmm. that they think you would really like, and you don't have an allergy to it, there's no real reason for you to say no. Mm-hmm. The polite thing to do is to receive it and say, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And you may not really want it at that moment. And it's really similar in that if people try to bring you into a conversation mm-hmm. and a discussion and they offer that and you just put your head down and say, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's actually hurtful to other people. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes our kids are so aware of their own, our shy kids mm-hmm. yeah. are so aware of their own discomfort that it never even occurs to them that they're making other people uncomfortable mm-hmm. by not accepting sharing. That mm. that gentle invitation. Mm. So makes it more relational. It makes it less performancy for our kids who are very shy.
So they can perspective take a little bit on, I will be kind to the rest
person who's
of
trying
people.
To mm-hmm. invite me in.
Yeah. yeah. So and parents can help teens prepare for that by having discussions at home. Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds cheesy, but today we're going to talk about this current event. Or let's talk about this Bible scripture and start the conversation and then say, now it's your turn and uh-huh. let them in the safety of the home mm-hmm. come up with a, yes, I agree with that, or a safe opinion, you know, like, mm-hmm. and mom doesn't correct them and say,
that's wrong.
Yeah. You know, like, oh, right. Yeah. Just continue to reinforce mm-hmm. that they're actually trying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In a one-on-one situation, if they're just making new friends, active listening helps. Mm. So they pay attention to what the friends say and kind of regurgitate it back to them. You know, if they don't know what to say back. Mm-hmm. So the friend says, I just had so much fun in algebra class. That's a stretch.
Yeah, how are you saying it was contrived? Yeah, that was contrived.
And so that you can say back, even if you're shy, algebra class was pretty cool.
So, and so you just repeat back what they said to
you. Yeah.
Like, what happened to you? I got it.
Yay. We're modeling on the Homeschool High School podcast. That's beautiful.
Oh my gosh, Kim. Sorry. You're awesome. I made my whole day.
Okay. We have so much fun.
I'm so bad.
All right, what about our kids who dominate?
Mm.
Yep. Yeah.
So
Sometimes you don't want to stomp on them.
No.
But dominating's uncool.
Right. Yeah.
And we know grown-ups who never realized that dominating was uncool. And they're in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s still dominating. And we don't want that to be our child's future. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yes, sitting in a workshop or Sunday school class and there's one person that talks. And they're not even necessarily on topic.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
And you cringe when you see them draw in breath. Yeah, and we don't want that to be our
kid.
All right, so how do we help our super extroverted, super engaged, interested in everything in the world? They just want to talk.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Yeah.
Love the enthusiasm, right?
Yeah. So, you know, teaching them self-monitoring skills and teaching them to scan the room and say, have I given other people a chance? And if I'm saying something, are people drawing back and looking upset? Mm-hmm. Then it probably means I need to be quiet and give other people a turn.
Mm-hmm.
So learning to read the environment and to learn to not say things, you know, like I'm allowed to speak three times in class today, you know.
Yeah. Three times is a good rule of thumb. Yeah.
We have used that a lot in our classes. So we've even gone to the point where we've given kids chips and have said,
Not like potato chips, like poker chips.
Yeah. And we've said to the, it's a good sort of equalizer to say to the kids who are less likely to contribute, your goal is to speak up three times today, even if it is just to compliment somebody else's point or something. It can be very, you as the adult can sort of monitor and choose how much you're going to, you know, accept that chip for or whatever. But it also is a signal to the kids who talk a lot. You know, when you've used all your three chips, look around, and if there are other people who still have chips, try to really hold back unless you see that there is no way. You know, teach kids that a little bit of silence is okay.
Yeah.
Especially for us external processors. Silence is like, oh, it's a space to fill. And that doesn't give the internal processors time to think and be ready to respond.
The beauty of that is when teens learn that earlier in life, then they learn how to be culture creators. Like, I'm an internal processor, and so I learn to say things outwardly so that I am helping to create something good. Or I'm an external processor and I'm learning to hold some of that back so I create space for everybody. And all of that gives them power to understand how to make a good team or how to make a good class, how to make a good organization as they go into adulthood. Great skill.
Okay,
another skill. Our black and white kids or our strongly opinioned kids or our judgy kids who maybe need to be coached a little bit on the fact that there's often not one right answer to whatever question is being explored, to the, and that we need to not dismiss very diverse opinions. We need to listen to them. And even if we think it's hogwash at the first pass, we need to say, I had never thought of that before. And then let that be the end of it. Until you actually have thought about it.
Say that one again.
If you hear something, even if you think it's utter hogwash, the best response is, I hadn't thought of that before. And then don't say anything else until you actually do think about it.
That's such a great life skill. For
another t-shirt.
Yeah, it'd have to be a really small font. But I was listening to something recently. It was talking about the art of debate in traditional Jewish culture, and that it's really highly respected and valued that people disagree a lot, like argue, like really debate a lot. Because it is valued, it is also not divisive.
Right.
So they commit to, no, we're gonna go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, because the more I listen to you, the more it's going to sharpen my thinking. And even if we never come to a point of agreement, we are both so much better at the end of the debate.
Yeah.
So it draws us together. It's unifying, not divisive. But that in cultures different than that, oftentimes we feel like, well, if we disagree, then we're not friends anymore, or we're not close anymore, and it's going to separate us somehow. So then when you have someone who does love lively debate, who is strongly opinioned, whatever, if they respond too quickly, in many cultures, it sends a message of that person is dismissing the person mm-hmm. and not just disagreeing with an idea or mm. or a sentiment.
You know, I think about when my oldest was in the early stages of high school and we started a homeschool youth group. So we're talking like dinosaur era. They were still truant officer at the door drills, you know, back in those days.
The early Jurassic period.
It was so fascinating because our family had been, I mean, we went to church and all that, but pretty homogenous as far as exposure to other flavors of Christianity. So in the youth group, there were kids that were kind of secular and there were kids in other denominations. Mm-hmm. And I remember them being on a canoe trip one time. And different, you know, kids in one canoe, all from different churches, and kids in the canoe beside them, some kind of secular and some from even other churches. And my son coming home and saying, it was so weird. And I learned so many things about people. And it was, so it was very uncomfortable, but very growing. And he found that all of these different people could be friends. And that they're allowed to be different, and he didn't have to fix any of them. He could accept them where they are. So it was a marvelous, you know, like he was able to listen and digest. And I think that difference, being comfortable with differences, is an important communication skill. It's like, settle down, just listen and you know, accept and
respect.
See what you can learn.
Right, absolutely.
You think in, okay, so in the age that teens are now living in with social media, there is so much platform taking, there is so much stating things strongly, and then either daring people to disagree with you or expecting people to support you. And it's not actually conversation, but it mimics it closely enough that we can be lulled into a sense that it's real conversation. And for the most part, it's, I'm not saying there's never real conversation on social media, but there is so much of this, I'm putting my thing out there and that's what I have to say. What do you think about it? Which is
like
actually
a posturing
not,
kind
right,
of thing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think that we also probably would be wise to help our teens recognize the difference between what happens on social media in conversation and what happens in face-to-face conversation.
And to learn, actually, that's a good segue to social media conversation communication skills.
So
for moms who want some extra support with that, our friend Leah Neiman has a website and a Facebook page just for parents learning how to deal with young people and digital world communication.
So, such great stuff.
So we'll put links in the show notes to her stuff.
Yeah, Leah's wonderful. She's got really helpful stuff.
What
else? What have we left out?
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say the nonverbal part of the face-to-face communication, the like, you know,
I love nonverbals.
Certainly eye contact. Yeah, we just did Vicky's chapter on nonverbals in our psychology course that I'm teaching that she wrote. Hint, hint, shameless plug. But the eye contact, obviously, you don't want to stare someone down, but you don't want to just look at the floor all the time. But also your body posture. Vicky gave us a great tip in a previous episode about, you know, putting your arms akimbo on your hips can give you a little, for a few seconds, can give you some boost of your testosterone and increase your confidence. But just actually facing the person who's speaking, attending to them, not looking at your phone and playing with your phone, you know, not looking away. You know, the old, if your arms are crossed, you're, you know, you might just be cold, but you might also be giving off that signal
hostile.
That you're closed to or hostile to what the person is saying. So just paying attention to how your body is actually open or closed to what the person is saying, too.
One of my kids said one of the best ways that he got confidence in communicating, you know, nonverbally and verbally, was to do drama. Oh, yeah. And in high school, I mean, as soon as he was old enough to do Sabrina's drama camps, he was part of that. And he said it really, really taught him so much about understanding himself and understanding other people, but that communication. And it's by trying on roles. He got to try different things.
Oh, well, one of the early warm-up exercises that we would always do when I was teaching acting and directing class or when we were doing drama camp or whatever was to take a very, very a stack of index cards with very simple phrases on them. You know, I'm really hungry. And then have them deliver the line in three different postures, intending to communicate three different emotions.
That is so cool.
And it was really, really fun to watch the light bulb go on in their heads and like, oh my, I just said the same words, but by doing it, holding my body this way, it said something totally different than what it said the first time.
Yeah.
So yeah, those kinds of things can even just be fun things to do in a youth group or whatever to just help kids become aware. That. Now you can get into trouble with that because, you know, I've talked with my husband about nonverbals and there are times now where I'm in a grumpy mood and he'll walk into a room and say something like something needs to go on the shopping list. And I will turn and look at him and say, so what, this is a hint that I haven't been to the store recently enough? Or and I'll take all sorts of offense and I'll say, why? And I'll, just look at the way you're standing. And he'll say, are you trying to read my nonverbals? Because you are misreading my nonverbals right now. So you don't want to misread the nonverbals just because you're grumpy.
Well, and if you think something about a nonverbal, then you can verbally confirm it with the person.
Through that, you can ask for clarification.
Yes.
One of the things that used to happen to us on most of our field trips is it would rain. So one time we went on a field trip to the Conowingo Dam.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was the infamous dam field trip.
Dam trip.
And my kids were so over it by the time we were all in Maryland's, our Seven Sister Maryland's van driving home. She had a big old set, 15 passenger van, and it was packed with kids. And my daughter was totally over it. and so she knew not to be whining and complaining verbally. But she was given the nonverbals, and I was over it by that time, and I said to her out loud, you're embarrassing yourself by your nonverbals.
That so needs to be on a t-shirt.
Permission to get my cell phone out because I got my phone down.
Permission granted.
But to this day, none of those teens have let me. You know, they're grown-ups. And I still hear about you're embarrassing yourself with your nonverbals.
Oh, yeah. So funny.
Oh, my. All right. I think we've had on a lot of the that's enough. Yeah. That's a lot of communication skills stuff.
We've communicated a lot about communication and we're out communicated ourselves here.
Absolutely. Consider throwing some drama in there. Consider throwing something like a public speaking course in there. Those contrived situations in which we practice communicating well are really no more contrived than the writing assignments that we give our kids to help them improve their written communication. And honestly, they're going to spend a whole lot more hours in oral communication for the rest of their lives than they probably are in written communication.
True
that. We want them to be good, strong communicators. We want them to be good listeners and understanders, as well as people who are easily heard and understood by others. Yeah, because communication is good. It can bring us together even when we disagree on stuff. Because there's not one right way.
Indeed.
All right, well, thank you for being here with us today. And look for more episodes in the future from the Homeschool High School Podcast. From Seven Sisters, Homeschool.com, brought to you by the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.